Well, at this time, normally, we would have public comment session. However, today, we do not have anyone to speak for the meeting, so we will go past that segment. And it's now time for us to take votes.
Continue.
We haven't heard from the faculty yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've turned my page too rapidly. Nick, I can't believe I did that. It's time to hear from Professor Nick Barbolas, who is serving as chair of the University Senate Conference, and to tell us about the conference goals of 2015. Again, Nick, I apologize.
It's okay. I knew you'd remember. First of all, I want to thank the members of the board, the president, and all of my colleagues here for the opportunity to address you. This is a sort of to-do list for the Senate's conference this year, and I hope at the end of the year I can reflect back and talk about many of the things we made some successful progress on. The conference wants to be active partners in the strategic planning process. We've already started discussions with President Killeen about some of the themes coming out of the board retreat and the role that we can play in helping to think about some of these problems. Most of what I will talk about are some of the ideas and issues coming out of the board retreat that we've already begun thinking about. I want to say a couple of brief things toward the end of my comments about the revisions to the governing documents, the statutes, and general rules, and also our hope for building stronger connections between USC's four subcommittees and the four corresponding subcommittees of the board. Should have probably made the print bigger and made the photos smaller here. We've just talked a lot about enrollment growth, and I think it's pretty clear that we're at the beginning of a multi-year trend of probably increasing enrollments. And as we do that, I think we'd like to suggest that there are various kinds of questions that we should be asking ourselves or principles that we should be keeping in mind as we pursue enrollment growth. One is, it's not just about numerical targets. It's not just about getting bigger for the sake of getting bigger. To use a phrase from Vice President Pierre, we should be pursuing strategic growth. Well, what does that mean? It means asking, among other things, where should we be growing? These aren't across-the-board figures. Which campuses should be growing? Which campuses have better capacity for growing in certain areas? Which colleges within campuses should be growing? Where is there greater demand? Where is there greater employment opportunity? Where is there a greater match between particular areas in which we could grow our enrollment and the needs of the state? So the question about growth where, I think, is an important question to be asking. Second, and we just had a great exchange from Trustee Estrada and Montgomery and others about the issues about diversity. Just to suggest that maybe we should be thinking about or need to be thinking about diversities, doing better on minority and underrepresented groups, but also keeping in mind, as just came up, that rural students, first in family students, international students, and growth in other populations also helps to produce the kind of diverse, inclusive campus that both represents our global mission, to statewide and global mission, but also produces an educationally diverse environment. And we don't want a formula that trades off progress along some of these dimensions for progress along others. We need to be doing better in all these areas. Because it's me, I'll just speak for myself here and say that one of the areas in which I think that we could be pursuing growth, given that we have certain limitations in terms of classrooms and residences, we could pursue a vast building program to develop more of these, but online programs and blended programs may be an area of significant growth in enrollments in various areas that doesn't require necessarily the outlay of actually expanding our physical infrastructure. We've made a lot of growth over that in the last 10 or 15 years. I think over the next 10 or 15 years, that's a major area of potential development for us. I'm going to slip aside and talk about this one. As we talk about access, one of the things that came up at the board retreat, Jim Duderstadt addressed the group. One of the lines in his book on higher education in the Midwest is, I think, really worth keeping in mind. He said, it's sobering, really, that when you look at future demographic trends for enrollment and demand in higher education, the groups that are going to be fastest growing in terms of future demand are the groups that are least well served by universities right now, the way that they're structured. And if we're going to continue to grow enrollments in those demographic areas, we need to think about what kinds of educational success they have access to, and not just access in terms of freshman enrollments or whatever. We're not doing kids any favors if we bring them in here and they don't succeed. We're not making a good use of financial aid if we invest money in students who don't ever finish. And so one of the things that we could be asking about is, what are the conditions that allow students to be successful here, to graduate successfully, to get jobs successfully? We're not particularly well equipped at the university to do remedial education ourselves. And so one of the things that we've been talking about in the conference is developing better pathways. We've talked about some of them as well already today. Increased transfer, increased cooperation with community colleges. The UIC has a new program in working with the city colleges. Urbana has a strong program with Parkland. Springfield has a strong program with Lincoln Land. These may be models of expanded cooperation with community colleges and increased community college to university articulation. But another aspect of this, I think, is looking at the conditions of preparation for students in public schools in terms of whether it really does prepare them to be successful here. And one focus here are sort of gateway courses in math, in foreign languages, in literacy, in communication skills that create the conditions for success here at the university. And if students aren't well equipped in their high schools or in their local preparation, we're not doing them any favors to bring them in here where they don't succeed. And so one other aspect of looking at these pathways is maybe working more closely with high schools and community colleges to help to improve the preparation of students before they come to the university. I think this is another area in which online programs, blended programs, MOOCs, and other kinds of things could actually help to improve the capacity of high schools and community colleges so that when the kids come here, improving their preparation there so that when they come here, they have a better chance for success. And finally, I think we might also re-examine what we consider to be the metrics of success. We've talked a lot today about the percentage of freshman enrollments, and that's great. But what happens to those kids? Do they finish? Do they graduate? Do they get jobs? We need multiple metrics of success in order to really find out whether we're not only providing access, but providing access to a successful and rewarding academic experience. I'm not going back to the second slide. I skipped it. There's a lot of discussion at the retreat about calling ourselves a system. Most people in this room remember that a few years ago, you couldn't use the word system in this room. And now we're saying, well, of course we're a system. Now, what kind of system are we? So it's a brand new discussion. President Killeen has partly prompted that new discussion. But I think we're still not really clear about what that means for us. And I think one of the things that will be happening in the conference and in other venues is a robust discussion about what it actually means to be a system. There's certainly a few things that would need to be answered under that set of questions. One is, what is the proper relation of the university administration to the campuses? How do we develop a culture that benefits both the individual campuses and the well-being of the whole and doesn't force a trade-off between those two things? I think USC's view is that part of our role as a governing body that brings together representatives of the three senates is to be one of the places where that conversation happens. How do we support excellence and vitality and growth on each campus and also keep in mind the good of the whole and not setting the campus's destinies or well interests against each other, because that doesn't serve anybody very well. Something else that President Killeen has talked a lot is the civic role of education. I think he's made this already one of his signature issues. The conference welcomes that discussion. And again, a few things that we've been thinking about under that rubric. One is, it's clear that we aren't just a vocational institution, and we can't measure the success of our graduates only in terms of their jobs. We also prepare citizens, we prepare community members, we prepare parents who raise families, we prepare lifelong learners. And we need to develop in them a broader outlook as well about what the purposes and goals of education are. One piece of that could be doing even more. I mean, some of the campuses are already doing a lot in this area, but doing even more in the area of service learning and volunteer activities that strengthen the link between the campuses and the local communities. Because we're the U of I, we need to think about this engagement also globally and encourage our students to see themselves as citizens on a global scale. One last thing on the idea of lifelong learning, and again, I'm going to just speak for myself here. This is one of my pet concerns. One of the things that I've talked about a lot is this idea, what I call, it's my phrase, nobody else's phrase, always Illinois. Developing a relationship with our graduates after they leave the university, welcoming them and continue to have a relationship with them as members of our educational community throughout their professional lives, throughout their personal development, through their retirement and beyond their retirement. People live a long time after retirement now. They continue to be learners. And what it really means to say, once you're a graduate of this university, you are always a graduate of this university. And we want to be the primary go-to place for the ongoing professional development and training that you're going to need, for your personal development, for just entertainment and areas of curiosity that you want to begin, continue to grow as you mature and throughout your lifelong years. And what does that mean? One thing it means, by the way, is helping people letting people save their University of Illinois email addresses, which is something that a lot of universities have done, and I'm stunned that we haven't done that. It's a simple thing to do, it seems to me. And then finally, two things, and I'll be very brief about this. A lot of you know that I and others have worked very, very hard with members of the administration to revise the statutes and general rules. That process started now more than 2 years ago. You can see how yellow it's turned. I know that there are some questions about some areas of those revisions that maybe want to be held and set aside and looked at again. There are new proposals to revise Articles 9 and 10 that will be coming forth at some point this year. But if we continue to wait until everything is done, it's going to be at least a year and probably more than a year before all the possible revisions and changes that we want to talk about are going to be ready to theoretically put into one big package. By a year from now, there'll be other changes and revisions in the pipeline as well. And every time there's a new revision or change, the whole process restarts and things go all the way back to the Senate's again. My suggestion, my appeal, some of you have heard this already, is to take the bulk of these revisions, which are not problematic, and to take action on them. If some things need to be set aside for a second look, like what does it mean to be a system? Does that have implications for revising the statutes? That's a very, very small percentage, a few lines really, of a document in which there's 400 or 500 changes that have been made. And I venture to say that 90 or 95% of them really aren't very controversial. I will tell you that there's already some grumbling from this campus that I've heard that a year ago we were telling people, you need to rush these things for the Senate, you've got to get them reviewed. The Board of Trustees wants to get this finalized by the spring or the summer. People did that, they met their deadlines, and now they're saying, wait a second, it's now the start of the next academic year and the board still hasn't approved what they asked us to rush through the process. So this is a personal appeal, I suppose I have to say, which is, let's try to get most of these things approved and settled, and let the other things that take a year or more take a year or more, but not hold up all the changes for that sake. And finally, one last appeal. As you know, the conference reorganized itself a couple of years ago with a set of subcommittees that allow us, like you, to do work in parallel in different areas, where there's specific areas of specialization and expertise within the conference, and then bring proposals from those subcommittees back to the full conference. As you look at them, they'll look familiar. It's not accidental that they roughly map onto the four board subcommittees. Just very briefly, the chair of the Academic Affairs Committee is Gay Miller, sitting over there. The chair of the Finance Committee is Sally Jackson. The chair of the Hospital Committee is Jorge Villegas. And the chair of the Statutes and Governance Committee is Matt Wheeler. And so we're hoping that as this year goes forward, there can be greater liaison and cooperation between our, and communication between our committees and the other committees. I know Trustee Hasara has already been in touch with Gay Miller. We want to encourage those kinds of contacts. And finally, I'll express the hope that while it's very difficult or complicated to add a faculty member representative to the full board, it would be very easy to add the corresponding chair of the USC committee as a non-voting member of one of your of each of your subcommittees. And I think that would be a nice way of establishing closer contacts and communication between these two bodies. Okay, I'm happy to answer questions.
Very good, thank you, Nick. Questions, comments? Well, I two or three comments, Nick. Thank you. I appreciate your vision of the future and your thoughts about the future. And you're right on the committees. We've had the benefit of the participation, and perhaps we should think about whether there's an addition to that. We'll work on that. I suspect you'll also hold our feet to the fire about getting the issues approved and resolved and working through the system to do that. I want to go back to something you said earlier that particularly hits home. And the first thing was that we need to work on preparing students for success and then access to success. And we talk so much about trying to help in the K-12 in our state of getting more and more students who have the preparation to have a chance to succeed. And obviously we can't necessarily affect that directly at the university, but I think the impetus that many of us have participated in and offering that encouragement to go forward, because you're right, we don't want students coming here and not having the opportunity to succeed, and it's so important. So appreciate that emphasis.
Well, thank you. I'm trying to speak today mainly as the chair of the conference. I did weave a couple of personal things in here. But I'll say just very briefly something more about this. It's a project that I'm working on with some people here at Urbana. I think it could certainly be a branch on all three of the campuses or even a university-wide initiative. You just have schools, some urban schools, certainly many rural schools, where they just don't have faculty. You know, you have the football coach teaching physics because he took a physics class in college or whatever it might be, you know, and you're not going to be able to hire enough teachers in all these schools to teach the math and science and other foundational or gateway courses that kids are going to need to be successful here. Foreign language is a bottleneck for many of them as well. So one of the things that we can do, and I think that online is one of the ways to do it, is to work with high schools and community colleges to find local people that we work with, that we maybe provide lectures to in a kind of MOOC framework. Where some of the content and the exercises are developed here because we know that that will articulate with what our students are going to need to know here, but the people actually running the courses are the people in the schools, in the community colleges, in the different regions where the student needs are greatest. It's a way of building capacity there without trying to tell them how to teach their students. And I think that's one of the ways in which we can actually help to better prepare students before they come here.
Nick, I appreciate your passion. Yes, Jim.
You know, I think we also should not ignore the university's role in paying some attention to the, you know, kindergarten to eighth grade group who are the guys who are going to be in high school.
Right.
And, you know, half of them in some of the inner city schools are totally ill-prepared for high school.
Right.
So we need to have some input in that process. Otherwise, I think we're not really dealing with the source of the problem.
Thank you, Trustee Montgomery. I fully agree with that. Every time we talk about this, this comes up, which is what's the point of teaching some pre-calc course in a high school if the kid hasn't had middle school math adequate to even prepare them to take that course and be successful? So it's a system-wide problem. It really is about developing a broader partnership preschool through high school and community college. And I think the president has talked repeatedly about a new partnership with the state, about rethinking extension and other ideas as a way of building our relationships. And I think one part of extension could be a kind of, we have agricultural extension, we could have a kind of educational extension, you know, where this model of outreach and partnership with schools extends up and down the preschool up to high school levels.
Very good. Any further comments? I knew Trustee Courts would have a comment.
Can't keep my mouth shut, huh? I think this is a great conversation. It's obvious that success in college starts at a very early age. But the one point I wanted to make was regarding your comment about the liaising of the committees. I can speak for the healthcare committee. Any and all faculty are welcome at any of our meetings, and you know that they're all open to the public.
Sure.
And I think that's a great idea. The more attendance and participation we have, the happier we are.
Sure.
And when the chair says, are there any comments from the floor, you don't have to be a member of the committee to sure. participate. So
yep.
please feel welcome.
What does someone say? It's a progress, not a destination. We've made a lot of progress in this area over the last couple of years, and I just hope it can continue.
You bet. Trustee Fitzgerald?
I would just add, simply from the Governance, Personnel, and Ethics Committee, I think we should all try and do better to work together so that if there's a priority from the Senate, that we know what it is from the Board of Trustees and vice versa. I know that, like, some of the policies that, you know, we're going to vote on a background check policy that took 2 years to get through. Mm-hmm. It would probably make sense if we took a committee person and a liaison person or find the right structure to say, here's what's important from the trustees' perspective that we get addressed in a reasonable time frame, and at the same time to hear back, here's what's sitting in our inbox that needs to get to the outbox. And how we do it, you know, we can figure that out, but that's something we should share it.
Why don't, if you'd be willing, your committee to take under advisement this issue and give us a recommendation as to how you see going forward. Be all right?
Do it.
Great. Any more comments? Yes.
A very quick comment. Thanks. Great presentation, Nick. And I caught at least three or four appeals. I kind of lost track. But I got maybe I can make one back. And I sure. think it's an obvious one. The university is the faculty. And in a profound way, we need a really deep and pervasive engagement in the future. All the issues you've touched on, and probably many more, including success and what access really means, and K through lifelong, and always Illinois, etc. So I think part of the role of the, I hope you agree, part of the role of the Senate conference is not just to populate board engagements, but to really build out this engagement with rank and file faculty right. for the future of their institution. And I hope we can do that in ways that perhaps exceed anything that's happened in the past, year.
Thank you for that. I certainly share that goal. And I think one of the major functions of the conference is channeling communication upwards from the campuses to the university level and to the presidency, but also vice versa. And I think we've done that unevenly at times over the years. It's not just the 20 people who sit and meet with you in a room. We have to be the conduit for a much wider conversation. And even 20 people is a very thin representative group in terms of the vast variety of faculty and faculty views on the different campuses. So we have to be honest brokers there. I agree.
Very good. Nick, thank you again. I apologize again for overlooking and getting you up there, but you obviously made up.
I hope it was worth the wait.
It was. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Now, I think it's time for us to take some votes. And I will read this to make sure I get this correct. There are two sets of votes that occur for two agendas as provided by the board's bylaws. One is the regular voice vote agenda with several items. The rest of the items are part of what's called the roll call agenda, and we'll do the voice vote agenda first. The items on the regular agenda were listed in the materials distributed to the board and posted. The secretary will read the title of all items. After she has read them, we will discuss any open issues, although I understand that the agenda items have been reviewed by at least one of the committees. And you may have contacted President Clean or Secretary Keyes for clarification. So I hope we'll be ready for review the information and to take the vote. After the discussion, we will vote on all items at once, and we will vote as a group. Of course, if anyone is wishing to vote uniquely on any one item, that can be accomplished. And please just indicate to Susan and she will record your vote accordingly. Susan, as secretary, would you please read the items on the regular voice vote agenda?
Certainly. A1, approve minutes of Board of Trustees meeting. Number 1, appoint interim chancellor, University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and vice president, University of Illinois. Two, reappoint interim vice chancellor for academic affairs and provost, Chicago. Three, appoint interim dean, Honors College, Chicago. Four, appointments to the faculty, administrative professional staff, and intercollegiate athletic staff. Five, appoint interim vice chancellor for academic affairs and provost, Urbana. Six, appoint acting dean, College of Fine and Applied Arts, Urbana. Seven, appoint interim head, varsity coach, football, Urbana. Eight, amend student health insurance benefit for Chicago campus. Nine, appoint head varsity coach, men's basketball, Chicago. 10, approve university policy on background checks.
All right, may I have a motion to pass these items?
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion of these items? Yes, Jim.
Just one question on the administrative and academic appointments. Where are we now in terms of modifying our process in terms of faculty recommendation of appointments versus board approval? Have we dealt with that?
Do you want to comment on that?
In terms of faculty appointments?
Yes.
We're talking with the three chancellors about the academic processes and about the quality of the materials and so forth. And in general, in academic institutions, faculty make those decisions in departments, department chairs, committees, search committees, et cetera. And so it'd be a very unusual circumstance that the board would receive anything on individual appointments, if that's what you're asking about.
My question was, you know, maybe we had talked about modifying the process so that we don't end up in the kind of legal position that we are currently in this pending litigation.
Dr. Pierre?
Yeah, I can, if I may, Trustee Montgomery, comment briefly on that. My understanding is that the appointment process at each campus has been modified such that appointment start dates occur only after later than Board of Trustee approval.
So that the process of making an offer is after the board is approved?
The offer is made, and then if the person accepts, that appointment goes to the board for approval, but the employee, faculty member, or staff would have a start date which is later than the date of the board approval.
So
board approval takes place before the first day of employment.
That's a combination of timing and process both, which is being pursued. Yes, Pat.
I just had two comments, one on the items involving appointments. I think it came up in the athletic department context. When it came up at the Government Personnel and Ethics Subcommittee, one question we raised was to make sure that the contracts have been looked at from a perspective to make sure they conform with our practice of avoiding making commitments to pay coaches their salary if they were to move on and take a new job where they earned income. And I think there was going to be a get back, but now I know the chancellor from Chicago, who asked the question, is dealing with the president as opposed to us today, which is fine. But I don't know if Mr. Barrows can tell us.
Yeah, there's a mitigation provision in the contract.
Yep. Perfect.
And
perfect.
It's identical to one that you've seen before and deemed acceptable. Yep.
Perfect. Thanks. And then the second item is just for information on the policy, the background check policy. We should be clear that the background check policy proposal on the agenda today applies to new hires. It does not apply to graduate students, and it doesn't apply to people changing positions within the university. My understanding is many other universities do apply to both graduate students and those other issues. Frankly, out of sort of respect for the process, we did not want to change the item today and to discuss including those other categories. But just so everyone's aware on the board and public otherwise, what I'd like to do is for us to engage with the idea of having a deadline of January to revisit those issues, which is whether or not the policy should apply to graduate students who work And secondly, whether it should apply to changes in position. Well, we can go through the committee process, liaison with the faculty, and have everyone participate in the process, but I didn't want to have this come up again in short order and people wonder what they voted on before. The policy that we will vote on today is as it was presented to the GPE committee before, with no changes.
Very good.
Thanks.
One other item that probably needs clarifications, item 8, that has to do with the gender reassignment surgery. To make sure you understand, it's not changing that decision which was made 2 years ago. It's a question of whether it should be done in network or outside the network, which is the way it was originally approved. Trustee Courts, does that clarify that appropriately?
I think your description is accurate.
Okay. I just want to make sure everybody understands what that vote, particular vote, is. Any further discussion? Yes, Tim.
Along those lines, for the record, I plan to vote yes on all agenda items, except I'd like to vote no on item 8. Many of you remember 2 years ago when we first discussed this, I was against it from a medical ethics point of view, and I still am. You have a situation where you could conceivably have an 18-year-old deciding on permanent sterility. No going back from there. And that's just me, but so from a medical ethical point of view, I'm not comfortable with that. But for this specific change, I also think it's a bad business decision. My concern is about the liability risk for the university. I perceive some significant possibility of malpractice litigation in this type of procedures. So I just wanted to make that noted in the record. Okay. Thank you.
I too wish to vote uniquely on that item and vote no as well for some of the same reasons as Trustee Koritz.
Okay. Well, I have to add the same comment. We've had an extended discussion about it. My opinion is that we should stand where we are with the policy until we've had some more experience with the coverage and the process. And then if at a point in time it's appropriate to move it in network in our system, then to do it. But to me, it's a little premature to do it. That's why I specifically would not vote in favor of that item. More comments and questions?
Now, all right. One comment on the issue of transgender surgery. I think we're down the road on that issue in terms of having approved the process. That's number one. And number two, the issue now is how do we do it on the outside and spend money with outsiders? Do we spend it at home? So it's a business decision as far as I see it. And in terms of the litigation risk, I mean, I think the information we've been given is that there is no evidence that there is any more increased evidence of litigation risk than in any other malpractice situation. So I think that I don't think we should cloud our feelings about the process, which we've already concluded, by, you know, when we're dealing now with a mechanism by which we accomplish it.
Yep.
And just for the record, I'm with Trustee Montgomery on this one. I completely respect my colleagues on the board who take a different view of this issue, and that's what we have to do, is agree to disagree on that. But having approved the policy in the past, and I recognize we don't have a track record to gauge what the financial impact will be, I don't know that the financial impact will be different if we do it in-house versus out of plan. And so my vote will be in favor, but I respect those who have a different view.
All right, very good. Further discussion? All right, I believe what we do is vote all in favor, aye, and I guess opposed.
And I'll just check, make sure I have the record right.
Okay. All right, it's been moved and seconded for approving the items, all 10 of them. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, I guess, clarifying any nays.
Okay, I'm just going to go through them very quickly. Mr. Estrada votes no on number 8. Dr. Courts votes no.
No, not Estrada.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Cepeda. Sorry. I'm glad I checked.
Yeah.
Votes no on number 8, Cepeda, as well as Dr. Courts, as well as Mr. McMillan.
Right.
Yes.
No other nays on anything, right?
Okay.
All right, very good.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Now, the next item is the roll call agenda. These are items that are specifically roll call vote where we are asked individually to vote. We vote by trustee, and there will be an attempt to do this on the entire collective package. Of course, if anyone would like to vote uniquely on any one item, you may do so specifically by that vote. Susan, would you please read the roll call agenda?
Certainly. Number 11, approve academic and administrative appointments for contract year 2015-16. Number 12, approve project for design center facility, Urbana. 13, increase project budget and amend professional services consultant contract for gas boiler replacement, phase two, Abbott Power Plant, Urbana. 14, increase project budget for renovation, natural history building, Urbana. 15, increase project budget for upgrade and expansion, educational laboratory, Talbot Laboratory, Urbana. And number 16, purchase recommendations.
Very good. Do I have a motion to approve these items?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion of any of the items? It's been an unusual morning. We've had discussions of items. That's good. All right, hearing none, would you please call the roll on the items?
Certainly. Mr. Cepeda.
I approve.
But yes to all?
Yes to all.
Excuse me. Mr. Estrada.
Yes to all.
Mr. Fitzgerald.
I abstain on 13 and 16, which involve procurement, and yes on 11, 12, 14, and 15.
Okay. Mr. Hall, not present. Ms. Hasera.
Yes to all.
Ms. Holmes.
Yes to all except item 16, on which I abstain.
Thank you. Dr. Kortz.
Yes to all.
Mr. McClinton.
Yes to all with the exception of number 11.
Mr. McMillan.
Yes to all.
Mr. Montgomery.
Yes to all.
Governor Rauner, Ms. Smart, and Mr. Wilson.
Yes to all.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Before we go into executive session again, President Killeen, any comments to add further?
Yeah, I'd like to say something. If anybody is paying attention to the state of the university substantively, I think you'd all agree that it's in a wonderful state. Governance processes are working. Shared governance processes are working. We're paying attention to issues and resolving them. Strong institutions self-correct and self-diagnose and address issues on a timely basis. We're moving forward on enrollment and on our strategic thinking about enrollment and on diversity generation. We're excellent in research and growing our capacities. We are recruiting wonderful faculty. We're trying to retain wonderful faculty as well. The rankings are very positive. We're conducting both an academic review in depth, and we'll be reporting quantitatively on the savings there. We're also looking hard at our administration costs. And I think if you noticed Vice President Knorr's presentation, you can see that the ratio between administration costs and academic investments has improved in terms of that ratio. So I think there's a lot to be proud about. At least I feel that way, and the commitment to continuous improvement with eyes open is also there. So those are the comments I wanted to make with regard to this meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I just add thanks to you and your leadership, and you haven't had a honeymoon coming into this position, and I think I speak on behalf of everyone thanking you and Barb and Ed and stepping up. The challenging times from a financial standpoint, challenging time from an operational standpoint. But I think I heard a comment from each of the chancellors, you know, it's you have all these things going on, and then you have a whole bunch of students who come back to school, many of which for the first time, and they're all excited, and I don't think they think much about all these things that have been giving us indigestion. And that's refreshing to see that, and we're so blessed with those people. And Nick and your people who take those young minds and help shape them in the future. It's a tremendous compliment, so thank you.
Mr. Chairman, careful what you say, because it may be quoted 150 years from now.
I understand. I would ask if there's any old business. Is there any new business? I would remind everyone that our next meeting is in Chicago on November the 12th. We'll have a follow-up annual meeting on January the 21st, and then back here in Urbana on Wednesday, March the 16th. At this time, it would be helpful if I had a motion to move into executive session for, first of all, university employment and appointment-related matters, collective bargaining issues, and pending probable and imminent litigation against affecting on behalf of the university. Do I have a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. The ayes have it. I believe we'll be moving next door. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you all for being here. We will actually come back and adjourn a little bit later, but it will be very
can't be
low significance.
That's what I thought.